The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on September 7, 2008. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all today. On a few occasions in the past, I've talked on how we get it wrong or turning things upside down or something like that, how we get it backwards. There's many opportunities to talk about something like that, because basically we're deluded, and so we kind of chronically get things backwards, at least from the standpoint of awakening from what the Buddhas have said and pointed out. And this is very difficult for us too, because our confusion is so pervasive. It's hard for us to get any bearings there. In fact, that's kind of our problem, is that we take bearings, but we're always taking bearings on false things. Things that appear to be solid and real, but don't quite have the veracity, perhaps I could say, that we think they have. But today I thought I'd talk about Buddha in this regard. We maybe have some strange ideas, some false ideas, or maybe we just have ideas about Buddha. If you have ideas about Buddha, I wouldn't hang on to them. On the other hand, I wouldn't kick Buddha out or the thought of Buddha. But don't hang on to it. Whatever you think. Just treat it somewhat loosely. Realize that you are Buddha, but also realize that you actually can't pin that down as something particular. Reality is Buddha, or Buddha is reality. You are reality, or reality is you. Shokan last week was pointing that out. You are not it, it actually is you. But, then when we think somehow we can take hold of that, well, that's our confusion. That's our delusion. And this is about learning to recognize that whenever we do that. And we do that constantly with everything, even Buddhism, even meditation, whatever it is. We'll take hold of it, and then we think we've got it, we understand it, we'll have some ideas about it. But whatever idea you're holding, I can guarantee you it is really false in the end. It might be necessary for us as human beings to get hold of one thing or another from time to time. And it would be good if we can also just let them go when it's time to let them go. But when it comes to this matter of waking up and realizing Buddha, realizing reality, as we hang on to things, that just definitely is not it. So when we look at this matter then of Buddha, originally in the Theravadan school, in the early presentations, Buddha, and in particular, perhaps we could say the historical Buddha, Gautama, the person who lived in India 2,500 years ago. This is Buddha, and then we think that Buddha, or we spoke of Buddha then at that time, as a man. These early teachings would present Buddha as a human being. Well, some problems arose. And so later teachings in the Mahayana, we find teachings where Buddha is not really so much presented as a person, as a human being. But it becomes kind of a cosmic Buddha, perhaps we could say. And in fact, often that expression is used. Buddha is something more than human or beyond human. Well, this also can present some problems. We could say we get both of these backwards or turned upside down. But what have we done here? I mean, if Buddha's a human being, well, yeah. But if you take hold of that idea, then there's something wrong here about that. We're shutting out some other possibilities here. So we open up to that, well, then Buddha is something more than a human being. Yeah. But pretty soon, then Buddha becomes something, I don't know, grand or far away or undiscernible. We have no idea. Buddha is inconceivable. And while that's true, we might throw ourselves into a state of mind where we think that somehow we can have no understanding of this. And that isn't true. We can have understanding of this. We can have complete understanding of this. But the complete understanding of this isn't taking hold of a lot of ideas. Because once again, to the extent that we grasp ideas, they might be helpful, useful in many ways. But if we hold some idea of Buddha, it is most assuredly wrong. This is why we say in Zen, you know, you meet Buddha on the road, then kill him. Because if you meet up with something, you confront something like that, some object out there, some image that you have in your mind, you come up with this, and then you think, though, this is Buddha, but of course this is just your idea. And that's really not Buddha. So I want to just take a look at this a little bit. When we think of Buddha as a person, as something graspable, and this is perfectly fine, I think, from time to time. I mean, I like to present Buddha, speak of Buddha as a human being. Not necessarily just that historical figure of Gautama, but even of just Buddha appearing as human beings. We should realize this because this is something very close to us. It is not something far away, something cosmic, something way over there on the other side of the universe, or way off there in the future or in the distant past. It is something immediate right here and can show up as a human being. And in our first year classes, pretty much we teach these are where we basically cover all the teachings of the Buddha, what it was that historical figure, what he taught. We present it all right there, pretty much. Where Buddha is human. And we point out and we stress that point that, you know, that, well, you're human too, you see. Buddha isn't something removed and different from you, far away from you. So it's good that we have some understanding of that, get some sense of that. But the moment you take hold of it in any way, and of course, we used words, didn't we? We pointed that out to you, we used words. And we talk about that person. Well, then we also say things like, you are Buddha, or Buddha is a human being. So whenever we use the words, of course, now you can grasp those words, get hold of those words. And we'll do that in an effort to see if we can arrive at some understanding without noticing that whatever we've grasped there is something kind of false. It isn't really matching reality. What is really taking place here? It is an expression of our confusion about what is going on here. Even though we're doing this out of a sense of, you know, getting some clarity. Okay, I got it now. Just this morning, we started the fall practice period now this morning. On Sunday mornings, the group of us that are, those of us in the practice period now, we gather and then we're looking at some pieces by Dogen and discussing those. And this morning, the piece that we had where Dogen said, do not cling to your understanding. Do not cling to your view. Why? Why would he say something like this? Students of the way, do not cling to your personal views, he said. Why? Well, of course, many things, and things were brought up. You know, this is attachment. This is kind of a formation of self and ego. But really, what I wanted to focus on this morning, and Catherine brought this up, that when we do that, when we hold to a view, when we cling to a view, well, then we just have shut down. Maybe not completely shut down, but we have gone in the direction of, we're kind of shutting down other possibilities here. We're closing ourselves off from, well, what, other views? Well, yeah. But reality itself, which is not going to be held as a view, even though we can see it. But we can't hold it as a view. The problem here isn't even really so much with view. It is with holding. It is with freezing something out, with thinking that somehow we can grip an idea here about Buddha, which is what I've been looking at here today. But really, you can apply it to anything. Not just about these teachings or this practice, but a view that we might have of ourselves or of other people or the situation that we're in here. You name it. Views. We form views, and that's perfectly natural. These are our beliefs and opinions. And we get ideas about this or that. We hear some teachings about Buddha, some kind of pointings out about Buddha, Theravadan way, Mahayana way. And all of that's fine, but then we will grip it. We think the idea then is to grip it, to take hold of it in some way. And what this practice is about, what this teaching is about, is to help us realize when we do that and what that means, what is going on there when that happens. Because when we do that, we are actually shutting ourselves off from reality, from truth, from Dharma, from the actual realization of Buddha directly. It is not something that we can grip. Or take hold of, or form our identity out of that. Quite the opposite of that. It is the realization that from the very start, nothing is really formed. It's just the appearance of things forming here. But that nothing is lasting. Everything is in flux. There's just this constant change. But when we grip our views, we form our identities out of this. We think somehow we're getting a handle on the truth. That we can wake up to reality this way. We think that maybe enlightenment is something that is like having the ultimate view. Well, if it is, it could be, I suppose, but you have to realize that really what it is, it's a view that is can't be gripped. It is, and why can't it be gripped or taken hold of? It's because it is the realization that all of this is in constant change, flux. How can you grip that? Even when we say that, we've kind of framed it up now, and then we take hold of that. Oh, okay, I understand. But that isn't it at all, you see. Because we'll walk away with that, thinking that, oh, no, I got it. But we're not paying attention. And this is where reality unfolds. And if we're going to wake up to this and realize just what this is, we have to be there with that and not hanging on to some idea about this. Of course, ideas are forming, coming and going. We don't really even notice that so much because we do grip them. And even though they change and our ideas and beliefs about things do change, we don't really notice that so much. Once in a while we might spot that. But it is all flux and change. But in being caught in this very way, this is what throws us out from this realization, or blocks us, keeps us from this realization of actual truth, reality itself, Dharma itself, which cannot be gripped. But we can know that, see that, realize that. But we can only, this is a point that we that came out this morning, we can only realize that to the extent that we don't take hold of, grip a particular view. And this is what Buddha then referred to, the historical Buddha referred to as a right view. It is a view that is not held. It is a view that is allowed to live in that dynamic freedom that is there from the beginning. And of course that remains no matter what, even though this gripping is only kind of a foolishness within our mind. It has nothing to do with reality. Reality, and even that foolishness, just stays there changing anyway. But to the extent that we think we've gotten hold of something here, we're being fooled. That's why I say it is foolishness. We're being fooled. But we always, because it is and remains forever, this dynamic, we can at any moment awaken to it again and again. And that is what we need to do, because even if we awaken to it once, very easily we fall back into some gripped view, some held view. So this is what happened then with this idea of Buddha. At first, of course, it just meant the man, that particular man. But then it applied to, well, one who is awake. Well, then others who may awaken, are they not Buddhas too? Weren't there Buddhas before Shakyamuni, Buddha, Gautama? So then we list some of those, we name those. Of course, maybe these are just mythical figures representing, but surely there have been awakened people. Wasn't there a before this? Well, it looks that way to us. And so we can put things there. We can also create other kinds of, well, fantastic pictures and images. And this is what we find in Mahayana teaching. Because it was understood by some, at least, that, you know, we really can't get hold of any of this. And so it has this kind of this boundless dynamic quality and reality about it. And this is really, truly reality in a human being expressed as reality as Buddha. Or the true expression of a human being is Buddha, we could put it that way. But it is all in this kind of a dynamic reality that no one can really grip. And so we have teachings then coming along that reflect this to some degree. But of course, all the while, we're putting these teachings, these stories, into words. Well, we're actually putting them into stories. As we find in the sutras, like the Vimalakirti Sutra or the Lotus Sutra. These fantastic stories, incredible stories. The cosmic panorama is just immense, beyond anything that anyone can grasp. But if we don't understand what this is helping us to see and to realize about this, we will grip those images and those ideas. Wondering, are we really supposed to believe that the world is the way that it's being described in some of these sutras? Or that there really are these fantastic beings out there of all kinds, you know, beyond the human realm? Well, you see, you know, if we grip that and take hold of that and form some beliefs out of this, you have to understand that this is delusion. And I don't think, at least to the extent that any of this literature, these stories were written to help us wake up to the actual ungrippable dynamic reality that we find immediately, always. To the extent that they're written to help us to realize this in this way, then these stories were not meant for us to take hold and to take them in any literal way whatsoever. But because we have such a strong tendency to grasp, to take hold of it, we might think that it was meant in that way. And there are plenty of schools and developments in Buddhism historically that have done just that. But even there, within these kinds of gripped teachings, where these were taken perhaps in a way far more literally than were meant, or in some cases maybe they were worked on in such a way where people did mean what they were working out here, literally. But even there, you know, we can still take that and loosen our grip from it and realize that there's maybe something here that is being pointed out, but that you cannot take hold of. So this is where then Buddha in the Mahayana then becomes this, well, this ungraspable, this cosmic figure, and maybe seemingly something far away from you, remote, something to aspire to. Maybe someday I can be something. But of course, this is all wrong, because that kind of thinking, what this teaching is about, is to notice that you can't grip this. And what are you doing there? You are gripping. You are gripping one thing after another. You're gripping yourself. Maybe if I practice and have kelpa after, I can do. This is confusion there, right from the very start. So these teachings then opened up in this way. The early teachings where Buddha was presented very much as a human being, and later we find that seems to be lost amongst all of this kind of fantastic imagery. But is the one better than the other? Is it more correct to say then that, well, we really should just talk about Buddha as a human being, because this other stuff is just kind of sheer fantasy? Well, if we do that, then everything falls back into it just becomes a kind of matter of fact and definite and precise actual points in history and things like this that we think that we can grip, not realizing that it is utterly illusory. We lose sight of that. So then we work in a way to expand this out and deliberately put it into language that you really can't get hold of and grip in any way, except the human imagination is such that we can form it into things in our mind and thinking that somehow we can take hold of it. And of course some people can't buy that. They'll think that this is just nonsense. These are just a bunch of fairy tales, really missing the point there. Other people, well, buying the fairy tales, you know, believing in Santa Claus, basically, not realizing that these are mythical. Because you see, our gripping minds are such that we'll think, well, either it is real or it is not. Either it is true or it is not. Either it is a being, it is a form thing, it is something that we can get hold of here, it's substantial, or it is not. And how can we offer a teaching that is helping us to see that these are extremes that we tend to go to, and it isn't one or the other? That in the end, Buddha isn't some particular form thing, the historical Buddha or not. But then, were we to describe this or paint this in some way so that you cannot easily grip, well, now we're supposed to think it's something, oh, wow, it's just unnameable. It's something like that. No, because we've taken ourselves now out of the immediacy of this moment and realizing what is just right here now. That this right here is emptiness. So how do we find a teaching to do this? Because on the one hand, we'll make it something grippable and we will grip it. Or we make it deliberately non-graspable, but yet we'll continue to grasp in some way. So by using, I think, using all of these teachings properly, I think this can help us to see that, yes, it is all immediately here. This is it. Buddha, or reality expressed as a human being, Buddha, is immediately here. This is why it is you. You are just this. That's how immediate it is. But while it is here, it is just this, it is immediately now, it cannot be gripped at all. Here it is, and what is it? We can't express that. We can't get hold of that. We can't say just what it is. What is Buddha? What am I? What is this? And we can't say. Now, because our minds constantly lunge toward one extreme or the other, we'll think that somehow now we're stuck. Because we think, well, if I can't get hold of it, then it's like, nothing. So we think the inconceivable then is something like that. We don't realize that the inconceivable is just this right here. But I do conceive that. I conceive the sound, I hear the sound, I see the floor, I can feel the floor, hear the floor when it's being rapped on. Yeah, but right there within that, the conceived substantiality of this Buddha, this reality right here, is deception. It doesn't have the substantiality, the endurance, the permanence that we naively attribute to it. And yet, it is not something ephemeral, something distant, something cosmic, something inconceivable in the sense of, It is right here. It is just this. And even here, right now, we cannot conceive of just this, what this is. But we can see it. We can hear it. We can feel it. We can know it. And we do know it. It is a matter of waking up then to what it is that we do know, what we immediately know, what we've known all along. This is enlightenment. Enlightenment isn't something for you to figure out. It isn't something for you to get the right idea of. Enlightenment is nothing more than realizing just what this is. It is just this that cannot be grasped, but here it is. And not something distant, not something you have to work toward, not something you have to figure out. It is just this that we need to wake up to see its true nature, to realize that whatever it is that you've gotten hold of, some thought or even something in a physical sense of grasping one thing or another, that we think we understand this, I have this, I know this, but realize that the actual dynamic reality of this moment is such that you actually can't grasp anything there. There isn't even a you formed that is doing the grasping, really. You can't find that. But this is what we can come to know and to realize directly and immediately. Were we not deceived by this? And so we can speak of Buddha in these two ways. We could speak of everything in these two ways. But here it is, something seemingly grippable, and yet, if we look carefully, what? Nothing to say, but here it is. So when we say, what, and then we say, well, you can't answer that, what, then we think, well, we're lost. No, but here it is. See, we're not lost. We can understand. Here it is. We see this. What we're talking about is actually understanding the true nature of this. What is the true nature of this? Well, we say emptiness. What is it? Can't get hold of it here. Lacking any... So this awakening then, finally, seeing Buddha in reality, in truth, in immediacy, right here, right where you sit, just realizing this immediately and indirectly, is a matter of simply waking up to what is actually taking place in this moment and not holding ideas about it or carrying on with a sense of self or a personal agenda, holding to our personal views, as Logan warned against. Students of the way, do not cling to personal views. And this is why. We say in the Heart Sutra, Norm's class now starting tomorrow night I highly recommend. I'm going. I want to hear what Norm has to say about that sutra. Great sutra. Heart of wisdom teachings in the Mahayana. But it says in the Heart Sutra, it speaks of perverted views. What is a perverted view? It is a held view. Any view that you hold, that you believe, you think, this is the truth. It is a gripped view. That is perverted. Perverted in what way? I mean, it doesn't mean like it's twisted or sick or anything like that. Well, it could be, I suppose, but it just means it's a held view. It is a frozen view. Perverted, why? Because it doesn't actually reflect or match reality. It matches whatever it is that we're making up there, that we're holding to. It is just that. A representation of our confusion. So that we call perverted view. This is about waking up to what the Buddha called, originally was called right view. And right view is that that isn't held by anyone. Cannot be held. But there is such a thing as right view. It is found in immediacy. We all are privy to it even now. It's just that most of the time we're distracted. We're distracted by our thinking, by our gripping, by our believing, by our formation of an identity and a self that cuts us off from the direct realization of this moment, of this reality. Any questions about what I said here? Yes?
Right now, we are all being asked to form views, this being political season. The information out there is admittedly not good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are kind of becoming rather concrete about it. I can see where if people would lighten up, perhaps we could be advanced. But at the end of the day, a vote has to be made, and what's the right way to act, or how does one decide at that moment?
Well, I think what we need to do there is, first of all, to watch our own mind, to realize where we are with this. We're exposed to these views and those views and counter views, and if we're paying attention, really looking at what is going on here, we might see where we're being manipulated, we're being kind of twisted to think this or that. But we want to be looking generally to find out where things might be opening up. You know, when somebody's inviting you to, well, look at that person and he said this and she said that and whatever else, you know, we just where everything is tightening down, realize what's going on there. Notice who's trying to sell this kind of a point, I would say. To watch where things go toward the narrow and the brittle and the graspable and the tightening down, as opposed to where things might be opening up and into a more holistic view, a wholesome view, a view that is taking in everyone and everything. So these are things that I would be watching for and seeing, you know, if different candidates might be or their machines and things behind them are pushing for one approach or another. But in the end, what I would say is, you know, just open your, don't tighten down on pass judgment and just see this. Just there's some discernment here, but we don't need to lay anything else in addition onto that. But just see what that is. And now I would say, watch your own mind. As best you can with purity of heart, realize what might be most helpful for us as a society, as a whole, because that's what this election is involved with. It's not involved with just you or your pocketbook. It's really about all of us. It's about the whole, about totality here. So as I say, whichever one seems to be expressing something that's opening up to that, I'd try to look for that. And anything else that might be shutting is down, fracturing things, dividing things off, I'd be watching for that. But now, without any additional judgment other than just that discernment and making sure that you're not operating out of some kind of personal agenda here or vengeance or anger or whatever, now, if you can, go ahead. Maybe talk to others about this leading up and then go ahead and vote. So that's what I would say. But most of all, it's, you know, watch your own mind. Because we can so easily be siphoned off into, you know, particularly, it's the one who will fragment things and who will box things up and really heavily label the stuff. That's the stuff that will really, if we're not paying attention, our minds will easily go in that direction. We easily go toward the fragmented and toward the defined and the boxed up and the nailed down. We easily go that way because it's grippable, and we have the strong desire, this is wanting to grasp, to get hold. Oh, I want the right answer, you see, as opposed to in the other direction, which is more, you know, well, it's not grippable. You know, it seems a little bit more nebulous to us, perhaps. But that is the field in which the dynamic reality is all taking place. Things are that way. They're tumbling and very, very liquid. But it's hard to point that out to people. It's hard for us to even understand that. But we can watch how our minds will go toward the, what can I say, the fractured and the broken. I remember another time too, I remember years ago, Jean and I, we were watching a political debate, and our daughter, Marianne, when she was just a little girl, and she was sitting there with us, and I forget now which debate it was years ago now. Anyway, the two people were debating, and then Marianne, finally, she looked at us at one point, she says, well, who's the good guy? she wanted to know who was right here, you know. So then we tried, she was just a child, maybe 8, 9 years old. I don't know how old she was now, but at that time. But and so I didn't want to say, well, this is the good guy and that's the bad guy. So we tried to talk to her about, you know, not to quite see it in those terms. But for a child, yeah, it's easy. Well, for all of us, if you make it black and white, it's easy. It's grippable. That's what I mean by the fractured. But we have to mature. We're all adults here now. We're not children. And even with children, though, we want to be careful with this. You nail it down and hand it to them, you're going to be nailing down their mind on something. Make them a very brittle and rigid person. They don't have an open mind, a tolerant, magnanimous mind that can just tumble with all of this and see the dynamic reality that we're really in. You want to help them grow and to blossom into that. But even for ourselves, it's the same kind of thing is going on. And if we're going to mature as an enlightened being, to find that and to express and to realize that, we have to open up to all of this. And to the extent that we're nailing things down and shutting things down and labeling and going after one or the other, and that's the thing we want to be watching for, that kind of rigidity of mind and that brittleness of mind that is not a mind of awakening. The mind of awakening is over here in this zone that might strike us as being not so comfortable at first because we can't really get hold of anything here. And yet, in learning to see the whole dynamic there that is unfolding, we will find freedom within and peace of mind and some rationality and calmness and compassion and understanding as well. So watch your mind through all of this. That's what I would say. So I don't know. Does that help at all? No. Yes.
Would you comment for those that practice this way? Would you comment on the tendency to then cling to not clinging?
Yeah.
That would be the next thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, right. Well, yeah, if you form not clinging into a thing, that's what I want. I want to be not clinging. Yeah. That's.
I'm not going to cling at all today.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not the way to go about it. Because we can't, you see, we can't do that. But that's our approach at first until we start to learn a little bit more about this. Our approach is, get a grip on that now. Yeah, not clinging. There you go. That's it. Not clinging. But not realizing what we're doing, you see. So how is this not clinging accomplished? Well, never mind whether you're clinging or not. It's okay. If you're clinging, okay, it's natural to do that. Everybody does. That's okay. Just let that part go. Don't worry about it. But we think we have to do something about it. Oh, look at that. I'm clinging again, and I don't want, you see. But what we have to do is to realize that it's quite natural for a human being to form ideas or whatever else, and then to grip them, to form our identity out of all of that. That's a natural thing for that to occur, so let it occur. But notice what's happening with that. That's what we need to do. We start to realize what we're doing. We see ourselves allowing ourselves to get boxed up and fragmented and ripped from, you know, something else here that we really have to live with in the end, even though maybe we don't like it, but maybe there's a different approach to all of that, to these other people who have different views or whatever else. We can kind of just sort of lighten up, soften up about all of this. And now we can begin to allow things to happen. So it isn't like a matter of like, don't cling. We can't make that into a rigid thing, you see. So that's what we're watching for. So we just allow these things to happen and let things evolve and change over time. What this practice is to just bring ourselves back, bring ourselves back, bring ourselves back. Bring ourselves back to what? Well, noticing what we're doing and realizing what this is when we do that. When we form views and hold to them. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't form views or that we mustn't form, but we have to form views, and we do. But we can keep them from ruling us, from running the show, from forming our identities out of all of those things. To the extent that some ideas and forms and beliefs and whatever are functional and helpful and useful for us in this moment, well, let's use them, but in the context of the whole, how is this affecting others outside of my immediate little concern here? We want to try to keep our mind open to all of that. And so just keep it all very, very flexible and loose. Sometimes people think that our way is just kind of wishy-washy, just to go whichever way the wind is blowing. And that's, of course, that's not it at all. And I hope I've given you a sense of that this morning, how it's not that at all. So it's neither extreme to just tie it all down and nail it all down, nor is it to just let it all kind of go whichever way it's going to go. No, we have some responsibility here, and that is, and we keep bringing ourselves back to just this. But we are watching our own mind above all. And even when we catch ourselves caught up in some kind of anger or push some idea through or whatever, that's all right. Now we don't have to be disappointed in ourselves or get down on ourselves for that sort of thing. That's just perpetuating it all over again. Learn to be forgiving. Not excusing, but forgiving at least. And realize what we are, where we're a human being. And human beings with a human mind, we do these sorts of things. But now maybe we can learn to let that go and express itself in some kind of organic way rather than trying to kill it. So in other words, it's the same kind of thing where I say when things become grippable and fractured and that sort of thing, brittle, whatever, defined, and the lines are all starkly drawn and all that. That's easy to find. And so then we say, well, yeah, I want this not clinging kind of mind. But our tendency is to go there, you see. And of course, that's just simply not it. So it applies even to that. So let's go in this other place. Well, I can't really get a whole... Yeah, I know you can't, can you? It's kind of just like with your meditation. I remember in the early days when I was first learning about meditation and practicing and wanting to get it right and I don't quite know, am I doing this right? And it seemed like I have a busy mind and all of this, and I'd let things like that bother me. And I wasn't really sure if I was doing this right anyway. And I'm like, what exactly am I supposed to be, So I'd have concerns like this. Sometimes I'd bring some of these up to my teacher, and I would get some vague response. It didn't seem to help much, But what I learned finally is that it's just in the actual doing of this and bringing ourselves back to this and having this interest in being awake and present and forgetting ourselves, our own little peculiar little agenda and whatever, and just I want to move toward wholeness, toward enlightenment, toward seeing, and not gripping some particular thing. We can start to learn that, even in our meditation, through the meditation itself, or through the listening to these kinds of teachings and whatever. So it's a movement. Just watch for that move. We can start to discern when it is we're going toward this fragmented world or when we're opening up to a more dynamic whole here. Realizing that we can't go to either extreme. We're working in a dynamic here. There is stuff, there are formed things in here that we need to work with and use. We have to understand all of that. But we don't have to go to the extreme in either case. Anything else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.